Just a warning before we start, there is discussion of suicidal thoughts in this episode. I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. Today, we're bringing you a story from our UK team about that Meghan and Harry interview with host of Today in Focus, Anushka Astana.
It was always obvious that Meghan and Harry were going to say something big in their two-hour sit-down with Oprah Winfrey. The interview marks yet another twist in the tale of the American actor who fell in love with a British prince, resulting in a marriage that was seen as hugely significant, including for many young black women, like those who spoke to The Guardian's Amna Modin.
The voices were, from the ones that I spoke to, was almost unanimous. There was real joy and excitement in the run-up to Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's wedding. People spoke about how much that they loved that she tapped into her culture and her heritage for the wedding, from the black choir, the preacher, you know, to her mum quietly just sitting by her side with her natural hair. There was lots of speculations about what does this wedding mean for black people, particularly black women. Would it lead to a greater acceptance of black women in different aspects of society now that we do have a mixed race woman entering one of the most whitest institution that we have in the UK?
But that optimism quickly began to fade and then was shattered this weekend as Meghan and Harry told the world about the racism, hostility and lack of support that they said drove them to break ties with the royal family and leave the UK.
Some people just feel like they feel dumb. You know, they feel like, I can't believe I ever thought that institution could ever change or that British society could ever change. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of frustration and a bit of hurt, I would say. One woman that I spoke to, Natasha Malenga, who's a writer and a podcast host, she really was dismissive at the idea that this had nothing to do with Meghan's race. She felt like this was could have been an opportunity to turn over a new leaf and better represent the people of this country. But instead, she feels like the fact that she's been forced to leave the royal family speaks to just how deeply entrenched racism is within, you know, the British ruling class and loads of different aspects within the UK.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, what Meghan and Harry's revelations tell us about British society and the future of the monarchy. Archie Bland, you've been writing about the briefing wars in the run-up to this interview. First aired on CBS in the US and then last night on ITV in the UK. We've been waiting for it for some time. I must have watched that clip of Oprah saying, "Were you silent or silenced 10 times?" What were you expecting and what did you think when you finally watched it?
I think it was pretty clear from, as you mentioned, the clips that were fed out by CBS and from much of the mood music to emerge from the palace and from Harry and Meghan's side that this was going to be a deeply uncomfortable broadcast for the monarchy as an institution in any circumstances. But I think we probably expected that that critique would be framed in quite general terms. And what actually resulted was an extraordinarily candid, personal, incendiary broadcast that I think we'll be talking about for a very long time to come.
You can say that again. Now, for me, and I imagine for many others, perhaps the most shocking part of the interview was when Meghan discussed racism within the royal family. And in particular, the idea that a member of the family, and we can try to guess at who that might be, raised concerns about what Archie's skin colour would be.
And also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
What?
How much of a bombshell was that?
I think it was really shocking to hear. And I think if you were looking for a kind of an index of what a remarkable revelation that was, you could see it in Oprah Winfrey's reaction. She looked visibly shocked. She responded in a way that seemed very human and genuinely taken aback. And, you know, I think what's significant about this is that racism has been a constant theme of the concerns that Meghan and Harry have had about their treatment in the UK. But in the past, that has generally been about broad public discourse or about the way that they are treated in the media. What's different about this is they're talking about something that came from a member of their own family. And I think that will really shock people. And I think it will also make it very much harder for allies of the royal family to portray this interview as merely self-serving.
It's a hell of an allegation, but it's not the first time that questions around race and racism have been raised with the royal family, is it?
You're right. I mean, the royal family is an institution which is obviously deeply tied up with racism. Even if you start thinking about things like the Commonwealth, it's pretty hard to see the royal family as having clean hands there. And certainly Prince Philip has a number of times said things which have been viewed charitably as off colour. There was also the extraordinary incident where Princess Michael of Kent wore a blackamoor brooch to a lunch with Meghan shortly after she joined the royal family, which she subsequently had to apologise for. So all of those things suggest that this doesn't come out of nowhere. But at the same time, in 2021, to hear an allegation that a member of the royal family would make that kind of specific reference to the skin colour of Harry and Meghan's child remains deeply shocking, and I think beyond anything that we've heard before.
Do you know whether the palace is likely to respond to this?
We're going to see. And I think these kinds of allegations do feel very specific and very difficult to respond to in no way at all, particularly when you think about the fact that last week the palace responded to bullying claims against Meghan Markle by announcing there would be a full investigation.
And on the question of race, Meghan talked about the fact that as a biracial woman, there was an opportunity here for the royal family. And I think we all shared that opinion. And at first, all the media did. It was seen as a positive turning point for the monarchy. But we also saw how that narrative changed. And the couple themselves certainly felt that some of the coverage was racially charged. Do we know if the royal family, or the firm as she called them, supported them over that?
According to them, they never felt supported. And the suggestion that comes through again and again in this interview is that when they wanted to respond to this kind of thing, they came up against opposition internally, which led them to feel that their very real worries about this stuff weren't being taken seriously. All of this goes back to quite early on in Meghan's engagement to Harry, where there were references to her being from the ghetto, references to her being exotic, all of this kind of coded language and stuff which was sort of plausibly deniable, perhaps just about if you were from the parts of the media that used that language, but which felt very clearly to Meghan and Harry like an expression of an underlying racism. Harry actually addressed this in the interview, where he talked about what he viewed as some of the colonially charged language used by parts of the press. And really strikingly, he said that he never felt that he and Meghan were supported as they sought to take that on. He also painted a picture of something which I think is familiar to anybody who has watched the way the royal family has sought to navigate the press over the last 20 years, which is broadly, you make a deal with the devil. If you want to get better press coverage, then you have to make nice with them. And ultimately, for someone like Harry, that is not a deal he's willing to cut.
And obviously, there's a broader question about the press coverage of Meghan. You know, we've discussed before that Kate got quite a hard time to begin with. And I've wondered whether that might be comparable to what Meghan has gone through. But from what Oprah showed, it seemed not. She highlighted articles about Kate and Meghan, for example, touching their baby bumps. One was really positive, one negative. And then there were another pair of articles about eating avocado. Again, really positive about Kate and negative about Meghan. And she looked quite shocked by it. And at one point, it was so absurd that she laughed and said, "This is one loaded piece of toast." Do you think this showed that she feels she's had very different treatment?
I think it's pretty clear from listening to the way that she talked about that, as well as the actual language that she used, that there is a kind of sense of disbelief, not only that this happened, but that anybody would not be able to see that the treatment handed out here was not equal.
I do find it frustrating the way the focus is so often on the royal women and the tensions between them rather than the royal men. And in fact, Meghan in the interview said a turning point for her was a headline that, to be honest, sounds totally trivial to me, but it was about how she made Kate cry over bridesmaids' dresses in the run-up to the wedding. And in the interview, Meghan said the opposite was true. But a point that had clearly upset her much more than that was the idea of whether Archie, the baby, not you, would get a royal title or not. Can you explain this to me?
I can try to explain this to you, although it is important to say that I think to most observers, this is one of those pieces of quite arcane royal protocol that will make all of this feel terribly remote and confusing. But Meghan referred to a convention which says that the grandchildren of the monarch automatically become prince or princess. And Meghan complains that that did not appear to be the case for Archie and for their daughter-to-be. On the other hand, they say that as well as George becoming a prince because he is the son of William, his younger siblings also have been conferred with the title princess. And that means that unequal treatment has been handed out. And they view that as an example of the way that they have been unfairly done to by the royal family. This is quite obscure and complicated stuff. But I think what really matters about it is the way that it illustrates the sense of grievance that Meghan and Harry have and the sense that the kind of paralysing nature of royal protocol has made it difficult for them to get what they need, in this case, the security to look after their young son.
I mean, on this one, I have to say, I was a little more sceptical. Firstly, they've moved to America. Why do they want the title anyway? And secondly, around the idea of losing security, they appear to be extremely well off. Why can't they pay for their own security?
I think many people would say you have a very good point there, Anushka, and I would be one of them. But I do think it's also important to say that, you know, clearly this isn't about whether they are going to survive in terms of having enough money to look after themselves. What this is about is a sense of being mistreated by family. And so although these issues do have on one level a kind of a veneer of absurdity, they do also tell us something, I think, important about the sense of what the rift is within the family and what that tells us about how the country handles the royal family and what we expect for them in exchange for the money that they get.
And of course, the continuous undercurrent that is running through this entire interview is the idea of race. And it comes in here again because there is this sense of, is Archie being treated differently because he's a mixed race child? I suppose the opposite side of that is there has been a conversation about the so-called slimmed down monarchy for some years involving a number of members of the royal family.
That's right. And there is nothing new about the idea that actually, as, for example, Prince Charles, when he becomes king, the children of Harry will become of less significance in a constitutional way. But at the same time, I think it's not as simple as that, because it's also about the way that Meghan has felt about how she and her family have been treated and the way that Harry has felt as well.
Yeah, I can see that. But some might say, not me, but some might say that the whole thing is absurd and why do the others get princesses and prince titles? But that is another podcast for another time.
You might think that, Anushka. I couldn't possibly comment.
One thing that keeps coming up is the idea of history repeating itself. Harry said it a number of times, but it really does seem to be happening, and not just from what people remember of Diana's time, but for anyone who has seen The Crown, which let's admit, a lot of us have, there is almost an unbelievable ring of what it depicts happening in the 1980s with those sad scenes of Diana's first months and years in the family, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think one of the really awful things about watching all of this unfold is that at the very centre of what Harry and Meghan are trying to do here is escape the same kind of treatment that was handed out to Harry's mother. And in the process of doing so, they are finding themselves facing exactly the same hurdles that she did. That has culminated now in an interview, which I suspect every bit as controversial as the interview she did with Martin Bashir for Panorama, which proved to be something that she ultimately regretted, but that she felt she had to do at the time. Harry and Meghan clearly feel that they need to have their say now. And it feels very much like history repeating itself, yeah. So one example of this, which I found really heartrending, and I think you could see that Meghan was emotional as she spoke about it, was about a day when she was told, why don't you just lay low for a little while? And she said, I've left the house twice in 4 months.
Because you are everywhere right now. And I said, I've left the house twice in 4 months. I'm everywhere, but I am nowhere.
And I think that really captured that sense, which anybody who remembers Diana's life, but also, as you say, anybody who's watched The Crown has, of the way that once you're in the royal family, your image is not your own. And even if you're staying at home and doing absolutely nothing, the sense of whether you are out there too much is completely in the hands of other people, and your presentation publicly is entirely beyond your control.
Yeah, they seem really trapped. I mean, there is that point at which she starts talking about not even having her passport. We're talking about what this tells us about society and about the monarchy. And we've obviously talked about race, but the other thing here is class tradition and protocol. The idea of having to curtsy to Harry's grandmother and Googling the national anthem. How much of a shock was that to her?
Well, she says that it all came as a complete shock. I think one of the things that will perhaps surprise people, and they find hard to credit, is the suggestion that she really did no research at all about what it would mean to enter the royal family before she joined it. Whether she knew anything about it or not, I don't think it's surprising that the reality of the situation came as almost impossible to comprehend if you weren't already used to it. And yeah, like you, I thought the example of having your passport taken away even while you're living in the lap of luxury is exactly how we would describe a gilded cage. And it's exactly what Meghan thought of it too.
And obviously you've been covering how the media is responding to this. How reminiscent is it of the past, the way Meghan has been treated by the media and her relationship with it?
I think the echoes are unmistakable. And they're unmistakable both in the sense that we can see how Meghan has struggled with her mental health in much the same way that Diana did, and you suspect many other members of the royal family who have been unable or unwilling to be as open about it. But it's also worryingly similar in the way that actually, even if we think we've made great strides on mental health and how we talk about that in the media, even by Monday morning at 10 in the morning, we had already seen a number of people call into question whether she was telling the truth and accusing her of having been a liar about having thought about suicide.
I just didn't want to be alive anymore.
That was one of the most shocking parts of the interview for me, when Oprah Winfrey asked Meghan about the way she had been feeling, and there was no hesitation to admit that she had had suicidal thoughts. And I thought it was telling the way she said she'd turned to Diana's friend for support. I mean, to some extent, Harry and William have been very open on mental health. And yet from this interview, it seems that behind closed doors, there is this extreme version of the British stiff upper lip. And there was really no one for them to turn to.
That's right. And I think that one of the parts of the interview that will stay in my head the longest, because it is such a perfect encapsulation of the sort of contradictions at the centre of the monarchy, is that she tried to talk to HR about it. And that gets at the weirdness of something which is both a family and an organisation, and is about individuals and how they relate to each other, but is also an institution, because one doesn't go to HR within one's family normally, but the royal family isn't a normal family. And so the fact that she both did that, but that she sort of wasn't eligible for the kind of support that they might have provided to somebody else, I think really gives a sense of how perhaps Meghan tried to approach this as a job and expected the kind of support that you might get from that, but found instead an institution which was stuck in the dark ages as far as this stuff goes, and is probably as bad at dealing with these things as any family in the country.
And you could hear it from Harry too, who made clear that while others in the family clearly suffer with mental health issues as well, none of them talk about these things. Coming up, why did Meghan and Harry choose to do this interview? Okay, so all of this is very damning for the family, more damning than any of us had expected. Accusations around racism, a lack of mental health help, no support against negative media, plus Harry really criticising his own brother and father. None of this is going to reduce the press attention. So why are they doing it?
It's been described in some quarters as a kind of an exit interview, as an opportunity for them to set out everything which they haven't set out before and to give their side of the story. At the same time, it's been viewed in other parts of the media or parts of the media which are more sympathetic to the royal family as an institution as sheer malice, sheerly vindictive, designed to hurt the Queen and to hurt other members of the royal family and to burnish their own reputation, to increase the publicity surrounding their Netflix deals and other financial tie-ups in the US. Those two stories are in conflict. It's quite possible that there is also a bit of truth in both of them.
And do you think that the response will be different in the US and the UK?
They have a whole new life in the States and a whole new career in the States. And it looks like it's going to be very important to them to win that publicity battle. In the US, and certainly with Oprah, they have a much more sympathetic audience. And I suspect that even if the headlines in Britain are negative today, that isn't necessarily going to make them feel that doing this was a bad idea.
Let me ask you about some parts of the interview that I felt were less sympathetic to them. To me, it looked like it had been pretty heavily planned, with the full knowledge of the bomb, or should I say multiple bombs, that they were going to set off along the way. And there was a lack of self-awareness about their privilege. I mean, I'm watching it thinking, you live down the road from Oprah Winfrey in luxury. And at one point, Meghan suggests that a global pandemic and lockdown means people can now understand her isolation. And at another point, Harry complains about being financially cut off from his family. And I'm thinking, you're a 36-year-old man. Do you think that parts were a little tone deaf?
I think if you're a member of the royal family, you would always be wise to think about how you're going to sound if you're complaining about the trappings of your privilege and how that's going to play to people who don't have the same privilege. But at the same time, this is the trap. This is the problem with the conversation that we have about people in the royal family. And some would say that it's actually one of the reasons why the institution is fundamentally problematic, which is that in that case, I guess they should have to absorb anything that happens to them. I guess that if we're going to say that because they're privileged, that it's wrong for them to say that these things aren't appropriate, that it would be hard to say where that line would be drawn. And so while clearly it's the case that they need to take care about how they present themselves in these circumstances, I think most people would also probably recognise that our sense of what's happening to us isn't always coloured by a kind of a perfect sense of our own privilege and the ways that our experiences might not be as bad as other people's.
And, you know, didn't Oprah go pretty easy on them?
In general, the interview was pretty soft. There was not a sense, really, of Harry and Meghan being held to account. I don't suppose they would have agreed to it if they thought there was very much prospect of that. And certainly Oprah has done those kinds of interviews in the past, famously with Lance Armstrong, amongst others. But the thing is that I think she probably recognised as an interviewer that she was going to get a bigger story, and this certainly turned out to be the case, by coaxing the two of them into talking about the stuff that they were already clearly primed to say. I suspect that given their relationship with the media as it is at the moment, any sign of hostile or probing questioning is likely to just make them shut down and stop talking in an interesting way.
And actually, after the interview was carried out, so I wouldn't expect Oprah to have known about it, there were bullying allegations made public against Meghan. What do we know, or what can we say about that?
So what we know is that these allegations were raised internally, and that they were raised by a senior member of staff in the royal family and put into an HR process. We also know that while Harry and Meghan's camp don't deny the existence of the email or deny that the people in question had versions of the experiences that they said that they had, they claim that they have been misrepresented and put in the wrong context. People close to them say that they don't recognise the version of Meghan that has been presented here. I think it's important to say that these allegations are really serious and that they should be taken seriously and they should be investigated seriously. And nobody should allow their partial views about whether Meghan and Harry are in the right or if the other royals are in the right to colour their sense of how this stuff should be addressed. But at the same time, I think we also have to recognise that we don't need to decide who is the good guy and who is the bad guy here. It's possible both to say that Meghan Markle has been accused of bullying and also to say that there are aspects of her treatment, both within the royal family and in the media in the UK, that may not have been right.
Yeah, and many have pointed out that Prince Andrew, who was friends with the late convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, arguably got more support from the royal family and sometimes less hostility in the media than Meghan and Harry. They've really attacked the British media in this interview. What has been the reaction so far?
I think there are two main kind of lines in the counter-narrative against them, which we'll see a lot. The first is just to say that they're not telling the truth. And then the other thing is to claim that what is being said here may or may not be true, but that this method of broaching it is inappropriate and somehow beneath them. And I suspect that's what we're going to see over the next few days, to try and reframe that narrative so that it becomes about showing your loyalty to the Queen, showing your loyalty to the monarchy as an institution, and how unfair it is on the monarchy for this couple to launch this sort of attack from California.
And overall, we've talked about how aspects of this interview tell us something about race and about class, about the treatment of women and the role of celebrity. Having watched it all and having spoken to representatives on both sides, what do you think this tells us about Britain and the monarchy?
I think it tells us that both of them are in a bit of trouble. What is extraordinary about the royal family, and has always been, but feels so in a very heightened way today, is that it becomes a vessel for whatever the kind of cultural frictions of the moment are. And at the moment, some of those cultural frictions are definitely about racism, are definitely about the seriousness with which we treat those kinds of issues, are definitely about things like the woke culture and whether that is a problem and whether people are too careful to worry about things like bullying, for example. And so the royal family in 2021 has just become another mechanism for us to talk about those issues. I think we'll see in the coming days that we are very far from reaching a kind of a friendly consensus around all of that. And that if the royal family is divided, so are the rest of us.
Amna, we began this by hearing about the young black women you'd spoken to, about how disappointed they were around how the kind of Meghan story had turned. What do you think this interview and this saga tells us about British society?
I think it speaks to the limitation of representational politics. I think you can't just put one black person or a mixed race person in these institutions that are overwhelmingly white and expect significant change to come about. And I think it speaks to how much more we need to go as a society to challenge racism. It just shows how embedded it is. Some other people that I spoke to said, you know, this was a real mask off moment for this country, particularly the British press. And it's interesting to see how we've been read and interpreted from people across the world, that we're just so uncomfortable talking about race and that we're so unwilling to confront it, that it's just turned into this huge circus and farce.
Amna Modin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just an update on this story. After the interview aired, it was revealed that, according to Harry, it was neither the Queen nor Prince Philip who made the comments about Archie's skin colour. If you were affected by anything in this episode, you can call Lifeline on 131114. That's it for today. Thanks to Archie Bland and Amna Modin. You can read more from them at theguardian.com. The clips in this episode all came from Oprah's interview made by Harpo Productions. This episode was produced by Mythili Rao and Alex Atak, sound design by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Additional production by Ellen Lee Beta and Miles Martignoni. Okay, catch you tomorrow.